What's going on is a disgrace. Now, it's interesting outside. For great Americans, people that want to come down and they want to protest at the court, and they want to protest peacefully, we have more police presence here than anyone's ever seen. For blocks, you can't get near this courthouse. And yet you have nobody up at a college where you have very radical people wanting to rip the colleges down, the universities down. And that's a shame. But it all starts with Joe Biden. The signals he puts out are so bad. And I can tell you, he's no friend of Israel, that's for sure. And he's no...
Donald Trump speaking out about the protests happening on college campuses across America. They are severe at my alma mater at Columbia University, just blocks away from where he is right now. And he's saying, hey, where are the police? What are they doing to try and protect those kids there? We're going to talk all about that. I got lots to say, a lot to say, because I'll tell you, you know what? All those college administrators that were absolutely fine with Black Lives Matter and defund the police, they're looking at the situation now going, well, how could this be? Why would the kids be doing this? I got a news flash for them, because you guys created this. And you were the ones who preached this lack of tolerance for any other view that was different than your own. And guess what? Chickens are coming home to roost. But before we do that, breaking news, explosive news on this 400-page report, the judge in Florida, Aileen Cannon, releasing all of this information which had previously been redacted, and we're learning a lot. We're learning a lot about our intelligence agencies. Nothing should surprise you here, but yet, you know, look, maybe I'm just a little idealistic. I think that I'm still shocked and stunned by the level at which they're willing to go after the former president and prevent him from winning again. Welcome to the show. It's good to have you here. I am back from my magnificent trip. I still have more videos and pictures and everything to share with you. I was over in Ireland for a few days, got to see my family, all those roots. It was really, really magnificent and terrific. I'm going to show you some of that. But first, again, breaking news here. This is the Trish Regan Show. I'm Trish. Make sure you subscribe. Breaking news. We have just learned that Donald Trump was the subject of an investigation from the Biden DOJ, like from the beginning. I mean, this is massive. So the judge just unsealed 400 pages, all related to that Mar-a-Lago raid. Remember that raid? Well, they were really after him for a while. Judge Aileen Cannon decided to release all this information. It had been previously redacted. And the intelligence agencies were like, no, you can't do that. They didn't want her to do that. In fact, I saw some commentators on MSNBC this morning saying, oh my gosh, why would she do that? Why would she allow this? You know, it's hopefully a good thing to have a few non-corrupt judges in there. And by the way, she hasn't totally voted in Trump's favor. There have been a few things along the way that he hasn't really appreciated. But a lot of people on the left are like, oh, well, Judge Cannon, she was a Trump appointee, and therefore she'll just do whatever he wants. Not the case. That hasn't happened before. And when you look at the latest now, you say, okay, well, she had good reason to bring this forward, because the Biden Justice Department, the DOJ, has told us over and over and over again, you know what? They had nothing to do with bringing the case forward on the Mar-a-Lago documents. And now we have learned that, in fact, they had everything to do with it. Guess what, ladies and gentlemen? They were working on this months before, absolute months before. Let's take a look at some of these documents. Can we do the before and after there? Drew, you know, look at this. Absolutely amazing to see. Okay, so first of all, here we go. On May 5th, 2021, less than 5 months after President Trump's term had ended, you had NARA General Counsel at work, at work, at work. Well, you can't read the rest, right? Can we go to the version that we can read? NARA was out there working away in tandem with the Biden DOJ, Justice Department, which would be the Biden White House, to try and bring a case on these classified documents. It's like they were just going after him, whatever they could get. I mean, you see now, you can see all of it, right? There's a big difference between what was originally being allowed for the public to see, which was like nothing, and now what you can see here. So there's a lot of information. If we go to some of the other pages, Drew, I think that the viewers can again see how significant this is, that we're finally getting this information. Look, it's a lot of it. It's 400 pages. Here's another page explaining how the Biden administration is really weaponizing their, if you would, NARA. And it's really not good. So I suspect what we all thought all along. So again, massive amounts of information coming our way. And I need to read through all of this, but I just want to bring you some of those headlines. You know, a great reporter, if you're not following her, is Julie Kelly. She's been all over a lot of this stuff, like J6, for example. And she tweeted out, for example, now we understand, right, why everybody was so upset with Aileen Cannon, because they feel like, oh, gosh, was she going to expose some of this? Were we actually going to learn? Maybe. I mean, maybe we deserve to learn the truth. You're not supposed to do that, right? You know, it's just their version of things. So she's writing in this tweet, now you know why the insiders like Andrew Weissman and Barb McQuaid are desperate to get rid of Judge Cannon. Without her courage on this matter, incriminating evidence of Biden's White House and DOJ running the investigative show behind the scenes would be buried maybe forever. Now, you know, the whole Mar-a-Lago thing. I thought to myself at the time, you know, we didn't know a lot of information. He took these boxes of information. Apparently, you know, his justification is that he was president at the time and therefore it was all declassified. And yet they made a huge stink about this anyway. Such a big deal. Let's be very frank here. Such a big deal that now you've got Jack Smith presiding over the whole thing. And it's kind of, you know, messed up because you got D.C. and Florida somehow involved in it all. And we're now looking at how many different ways they're going to go after him, right? You got to keep up with this. We got all these criminal suits now against the president, 91 indictments. It's really, I mean, they want him gone. They want him gone. And we're going to get to what's going on today in New York City and what David Pecker from the National Enquirer had to say. I actually, frankly, don't think any of it's illegal. I mean, maybe it's unseemly. Let's be honest. What do you think the other side was doing? Anytime they saw a competitor, you know, suddenly they became a Russian spy. Remember Tulsi Gabbard was labeled a Russian spy, a woman who was a vet? I mean, come on. It is what it is, but it's not necessarily illegal. It's very unseemly that one would choose to use the New York Times or the National Enquirer to go after the competition, but it's not illegal to do that. So we're going to get into all of that. But again, still sticking with what Julie Kelly was saying. In other words, there's a lot of bias against that judge. Another point that we're seeing her make is one that I just did, which is that there was involvement there, it seems, from the Biden White House all along. So if you go back now and you listen to how, oh, no, this is totally separate. I don't think it was. And this would actually be right out of the Obama playbook. Or maybe it's just out of politics as usual. Maybe we just don't, you know so much about it. But maybe I think this is kind of how the Dems run their show. I remember talking to Donald Trump about this once, and it really struck me. I've told some of you this story before, but I said, like, why didn't you go after Hillary Clinton in a big, big way for getting rid of all those emails? Like, why didn't you do more? And he said, you know, ultimately, I just decided it wasn't very American of me. We can't do that because, you know, you just don't want to just put people behind bars. You've got to be sort of cautious about using that kind of power. So he was generous. Like he chose not to pursue that because he didn't feel like it was very American. It felt very banana republic. Let me tell you, the other side's not so generous. They're not generous at all. And they're going to use everything they can to go after him. And now they realize that it has been exposed. And so they're a little more, nervous about what might happen, because next time, if he gets in, I have a feeling he's not going to be Mr. Nice Guy. I have a feeling he's actually going to use his power to try and dismantle some of this incestuous stuff that's going on within the so-called deep state, the swamp, whatever you want to call it. We got to have a more fair system here. It can't be that just because you're the person they want to go after, they're going to use everything against you in a two-tiered system of justice. I mean, consider Letitia James, who, by the way, desperately tried to not even accept the bond, the $175 million. And, you know, she got shot down on that one. But the fact that she was willing to do that, what does that tell you? It tells you it's all politics. It's politics as usual. The idea that they're going to go after him and say that he is criminally liable because, you know, he says that his property is worth one thing and she believes it's worth another. And by the way, how is she, Letitia James, qualified more than, say, Deutsche Bank would be to try and figure out the value of Mar-a-Lago? I mean, she still has it at $18 million. If it's $18 million or $17 million, I mean, I might just find a way to buy it. right? Because that would be a bargain. Letitia, trust me, it's worth a lot more. It's worth a whole lot more. So you got all of these things sort of unfolding, and I think the American public is waking up to this idea that they're going to just try and get them no matter what. They're trying to wear them down. They're trying to break them down. And now we've got 400 pages of classified intel documents that we can go through bit by bit by bit and try and piece together just exactly what went down. The other thing is that now the stakes have been raised. Like, it's even higher, ladies and gentlemen, because if he gets in there, now the left realizes, uh-oh, we really will have a problem. He really will dismantle the so-called intel departments as they currently exist and try and figure out who was so sort of viciously and artificially and unfairly targeting him. I would say that it probably is led by Biden, right? Like, Biden wanted to make sure, and the Democrats in general, the DNC, I mean, they wanted to make sure that he was not going to be electable again. And unfortunately for them, and perhaps unfortunately for him, I mean, who the heck wants to go through this? They're actually, you know, able to bring forward all these cases and yet not get any of them thus far to the finish line. That ought to tell you a lot. I mean, think about the fact that we're looking at this 400-page document now all about these Mar-a-Lago transcripts. When you read through this, what you actually find is that they were conducting, the FBI was conducting a, quote, loose surveillance of Donald Trump's private airplane to see if it contained missing classified documents. I mean, that's just one of the little gems here. So why were they going to go after his plane, the surveillance? They were going to, like, spy on him. I wonder if, and I'm just throwing this out there, I wonder if this is actually about they just wanted to spy on him. Were they going to use the documents as one of the reasons to be able to get the warrant to spy on him? I mean, hey, we've seen this kind of stuff before. So these documents, apparently they were not without. He just had copies of them, so they weren't like entirely missing. And if you do any due diligence on this, what you'll actually learn is that, oh, apparently everybody takes these documents, and apparently people who aren't even president and can't actually declassify them. I mean, someone else comes to mind. Someone else, that would be Joe Biden, our current president of the United States. I mean, you got to be a little more cautious. You know, what is the expression? Those who live in glass houses should not be throwing stones. So his DOJ goes after Trump for this, was working in tandem with the National Archives about all this months before the case was ever formally referred to the DOJ. And, well, what do you know? There was no destruction of government documents. He didn't quite steal them, perhaps the way DOJ would like you to think, because this is just what everybody does, I guess, including Biden. He was VP at the time. I mean, they found stuff from nearly, what, dare I say 50 years ago? I don't know, decades ago, from when he was not even in the Oval Office. Let's take a look. And what did he have to say about it? This is how he shrugged it off.
Mr. President, classified material, next to your Corvette, what were you thinking?
I'm going to get a chance to speak on all this, God willing, soon. But as I said earlier this week, people, and by the way, my Corvette's in a locked garage. Okay? So it's not like you're sitting out in the street. But anyway, yes, as well as my Corvette. As I said earlier this week, people know I take classified documents and classified material seriously.
So that's the thing. I guess, it, you know, he's like, well, you know, I just turned him over. Apparently Trump, and again, I've got to read through all 400 pages, and you know that I will because I'm that kind of reporter. But, you know, apparently he did at some point try to interact with them. And, it, you know, I get the feeling that ultimately what happened is that the White House had made him a target. And the administration and the DOJ had made him a target. And so it just didn't matter. Like, if you screw up in any simple way, I mean, again, I go back to Letitia James. That case should never have been brought. And yet, Donald Trump may have to pay. What's the fine that she wanted? $454 million, $500 million. Think about that, $500 million. And then he came through with 175, and she was trying to still raid him and take away his properties and say that she didn't trust the bond outfit that was giving. I mean, it's just crazy, guys. By the way, it looks like he's going to pocket more than $1 billion thanks to True Social. I mean, it's kind of a crazy meme stock, and I've told you that from the beginning. Like, this is one wild ride. But if the stock stays above a certain price for a month, he gets to take some of his money out. And so, you know, he'll have that anyway. He's a big article today, actually, in Reuters, because this is just driving the left absolutely positively crazy. He may actually clinch a $1.3 billion social media company stock award. He started True Social. It merged with another company, the so-called SPAC. And the stock price went through the roof. They tried to prevent the merger. The SEC tried to hold it up however they could. Ultimately, they had to allow it go through. And shares have been on a wild ride, absolutely wild ride. I don't like meme stocks. So, you know, I'm not a meme stock kind of investor. But this is one that I have said from the beginning would really be an indication of people trying to show their support for Donald Trump. And so even though the company is really struggling in terms of its own revenues, you know, I mean, look, hey, you know that Elon Musk's company, Twitter, is struggling because big companies don't want to advertise on it right now. You can only imagine how difficult it's going to be for something like True Social, which, by the way, is getting into video. Maybe we'll have to start streaming there as well. But going back to what Drew just showed us there, the second Reuters article is really pretty interesting. You know, they're talking also about some of the challenges that the company has and how it's just got such an inflated valuation that it was trading at $35 on Monday. And look, the good news for Donald Trump is that if it can stay above a certain level, I believe that level is $17.50, and it can stay above that level for 20 trading days, so about a month, then he's looking at quite a windfall. And so this is angering the left, but yet people are still buying this company. Let me see if I can give you the latest on the stock price at this moment. Again, this is going to be a wild one. So, you know, I'm a long-term investor and don't believe in like buying and selling things quickly. It's not my style. And I don't even like gambling when I go to Vegas. I just don't, because I don't ever like to lose money. Look, it's down 8% today. Okay. So like I said, wild ride, $32.57 right now on Trump Media and Technology Group, ticker symbol DJT, DJT. So if DJT stays above $17.50, then he's going to be able to cash out quite a bit of money, I guess, just to pay off all these people. I mean, look at these legal bills. Wow. Lots and lots and lots of legal bills. It's really just incredible. So I want to get to, by the way, another just really important thing to think about in terms of what we're seeing with this 400-page release. They have told us over and over again that the White House is totally independent, right? That they're independent from the investigations into Trump. And we've gotten bits and pieces suggesting that's not entirely the case. For example, you know, Fannie Willis, her boyfriend, he went up to the White House, and so did she. Apparently he had meetings there. He even expensed it all. And then she went as well, and her people are like, no, you know, she didn't meet with Kamala Harris. She was just at an event there. So they keep trying to say, you know, there's no there, and that none of this is connected. But if you look at these documents, then it does seem as though they were trying very intensely to develop a case against Donald Trump, a criminal case against him for records mismanagement. So contrary to all of those assertions, it looks as though they were involved with this criminal referral was being attempted as far back as September 2021, which was 5 months before the official referral by NARA to DOJ in February of 2022. So that's obviously really, really, really concerning. And we have every reason to be worried about a kind of weaponization of the government. We saw it with the IRS during the Obama administration. You didn't want to be associated with the Tea Party movement for fear that the IRS was going to go after you more viciously, more aggressively than anybody else. And so this is why it's created such an unattractive and scary environment, I think, for a lot of people. It's like cancel culture on steroids if the government's involved with it too. And this is a lot of what is actually sort of what we're going to have to vote on as we move closer and closer to the election. There's a lot we have to vote on, of course, you know, the border, the economy, et cetera. It's one of the reasons why I'm really proud to be associated with a group that is working hard to make sure that we get more conservatives with conservative. By the way, I would even say, I don't know about them. I mean, they're conservatives, but I will tell you this about me. You got a good idea for the economy, a good idea for national security. I'm all in. I'm all in because that's what we need. More than partisan politics, we need smart people with smart ideas. JFK cut taxes. Thank you very much. In other words, it doesn't have to be just conservatives. It just so happens that conservatives are so far ahead of everyone on these issues. So I want to give a plug for my friends over at Americans for Prosperity, AmericansForProsperity.org, and they would tell you, and we actually may have one of their team members on later in the week. I'll bring more on that to you as it comes forward. But they would tell you that, look, you've got to win it all. You can't just win the White House. You've got to win the Senate. You've got to win the House. Because if we're going to really actually start to see change, monumental, real change that's going to affect our lives, then you have to have the wind at your back. And you have to have everybody on board. And so they're aggressively working at a grassroots level all across the country to find the candidates and the races that are really going to tip the scale and move the needle. Because, again, we can't have an environment where you get a lone conservative fighting this uphill battle and doesn't have the ability to get stuff done. I think he can win over the Republicans, obviously, but you got to have enough Republicans there to win over. And you got to have everybody on the same page. Let's be honest. I mean, you're looking at this Mike Johnson situation right now, and the wheels are coming off the bus. I mean, he just went in, right? I understand why a lot of people were frustrated with McCarthy because he kind of talked out of two sides of his mouth. I'd say Mike Johnson has been pretty consistent. But you can't just always have this infighting. I think Donald Trump would do a very good job at bringing people together, but you got to have the people to bring together. So they can't kill off themselves. You can't have the Democrats always killing them off. And you've got to elect a good group. So that's what AmericansForProsperity.org is trying to do. You should check them out. And, you know, it's one thing just after another. So, again, we're learning so much, and we're going to learn more as we look at these 400 pages coming forward. But I would argue that, you know, a lot of people were guilty of taking classified documents, sometimes not even knowing it, right? Stuff gets moved out in the middle of the night, I guess, and you're not even sure what's in the boxes. You had Mike Pence finding stuff at his house. I guess he volunteered, he called that one in. But, you know, hey, Biden had it at his center that was heavily backed, actually, by Chinese money for UPenn. He had, like, the, you know, the think tank at University of Pennsylvania, but this was his D.C. office, and they found some of the documents there and some of them in the garage next to the Corvette. Mike Pence, guilty of similar stuff, you know, meaning that they were once again trying to make so much out of what seems to have been nothing. Speaking of making so much out of stuff that seems to be nothing, you get the fifth day of this hush money case going on. And one of the things that's coming up in today's case is whether or not there's any illegality associated with a politician calling a friend and asking for a favor. And then that friend, which in this case would be David Pecker, who was running the National Enquirer, running some articles that were beneficial to one candidate and not others. Here's Donald Trump. I played you a short excerpt. I want you to see the whole thing outside the courthouse this morning. You know, they're not letting him campaign. Remember, you know, he can't campaign. He's got to be in court 4 out of 5 days a week. Another attempt to interfere in the election, he would say. So he is taken to the streets, literally. Here he is outside the courthouse speaking this morning, and I want you to hear it.
Thank you very much. It's a big day in Pennsylvania, and we hope the people get out there and vote. It's important to vote to let them know that we're coming on November 5th. We're coming big. Today is preliminary, but still it's very important, and maybe they'll think also about a very good person who's running for the Senate in Pennsylvania, Dave McCormick, and he's doing a good job. He's working very hard, successful man, wants to put his success to the country. He'll be a very good senator, so hopefully they'll be behind Dave and get out there and vote today. So, Pennsylvania, get out and vote. What's going on at the college level and the colleges, Columbia, NYU, and others, is a disgrace. And it's really on Biden. He has the wrong signal. He's got the wrong tone. He's got the wrong words. He doesn't know who he's backing. And it's a mess. And if this were me, it'd be after me. It'd be after me so much, but they're trying to give him a pass. But what's going on is a disgrace to our country. And it's all Biden's fault, and everybody knows it. He's got no message. He's got no compassion. He doesn't know what he's doing. He can't put two sentences together, frankly. He is the worst president in the history of our country. And again, what's going on is a disgrace. Now, it's interesting outside. For great Americans, people that want to come down and they want to protest at the court, and they want to protest peacefully, we have more police presence here than anyone's ever seen. For blocks, you can't get near this courthouse. And yet you have nobody up at a college where you have very radical people wanting to rip the colleges down, the universities down. And that's a shame. But it all starts with Joe Biden. The signals he puts out are so bad. And I can tell you, he's no friend of Israel, that's for sure. And he's no friend of the Arab world either. You take a look at what he said. He's no friend of, he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know what to do. He wants to take like a middle ground, and oftentimes that doesn't work, but it's certainly not working here. But what he's done to Israel is abandon them. And he's trying to be as nice as he can to the other side. Call it the Arab world, but that's not working either because they get him. And he's an incompetent man. A peace will never happen with a guy like this. Thank you very much.
So again, you were just listening to President Donald Trump, former President Donald Trump, outside the courthouse where they are hearing from David Pecker today, head of the National Enquirer, and they're trying to somehow make this connection that Donald Trump used David Pecker in a way that would be fraudulent somehow, because you can't use the media to spin your story, right? But Donald Trump making a very, very valid point. I want to go and show you just exactly what's happening on college campuses right now. Look at Columbia University. I mean, this is absolutely positively atrocious. I think we have some video courtesy of NBC News. Look, even NBC has to report on this stuff, you guys, where they're looking at what's going on over the weekend at NYU, at Columbia, at Harvard, at UC Berkeley. I mean, you got a real mess. Let's play
overnight, a tense scene at New York University. After pro-Palestinian protesters were forced to leave a campus plaza. NYPD moving in with riot gear, police breaking down encampments as a sea of protesters marched through the city streets. It comes as tensions flare at Columbia University, now entering its seventh consecutive day of pro-Palestinian protests. With the school announcing main campus classes will be hybrid until the end of the semester, stating safety is our highest priority. After the university's president's call to de-escalate the rancor, a massive NYPD presence was around the campus as a growing number of Jewish students report feeling unsafe.
It is complete anarchy.
Students like Andrew Stein, who says he was on campus late Saturday night for a pro-Israel counter-protest, but left terrified by an angry mob.
They started saying in Arabic, Hamas, Hamas, our beloved, please bomb Tel Aviv.
Stein says this video shows him being followed off campus.
Me and my friend had water poured, physically poured in our face.
At the pro-Palestinian encampment in the heart of the university, heated confrontations.
Go back to Poland is not anti-Zionism. That's anti-Semitism, and that was said.
The pro-Palestinian students we spoke to say they have no...
You guys need to hear that. She just actually said something which is really pretty crazy, that somehow there's not anti-Semitism there. And I got to tell you, like, for these people to be so naive as to suggest that there's no anti-Semitism on campus, that's just wrong, because it's nothing but anti-Semitism. When you hear that chant, to the river, to the sea, that is an anti-Semitic chant that's calling for the genocide of the Jewish people. So let's, you know, just get our facts here. I think that part of the problem here is, well, you know, some people may be worried about America's support of Israel, et cetera. Look, what this has morphed into is something very dangerous and something very, very different. There's a lot of misinformation out there, including from none other than Ilhan Omar's daughter, who was on she was arrested over the weekend, and including, you know, from the students themselves. Again, when you try and say, oh, this isn't anti-Semitic, I want to play you this video, because here's a woman shouting in Arabic, and let me make sure I get the right translation for you, because this is important, actually. She's shouting here in Arabic, and she's shouting about how there's only one God, and that is Allah. Well, you know, it's like saying you're not allowed to have your religion. That is a very threatening thing in and of itself. Let's watch her here at Columbia University. Okay, so here's the translation. And I quote, and this is from Radia Genoa, actually, on Twitter. There is no God but Allah, and martyr is beloved of Allah. Martyr is beloved of Allah? I mean, what are they calling for here? And you got to ask yourself, really and truly, what is going on? And why? Why does the media allow it and encourage it? That's a real question to be asking yourself. I want to go to MSNBC, where Ilhan Omar's daughter is putting forth misinformation, including, this is a wild one, listen carefully, because she says it near the end. The reporter's just like lapping it up. The anchor's like listening to her with his mouth wide open and not challenging anything. And she's a student at Barnard. And she's all mad, by the way, because she's in trouble and she can't get into the dining hall. And I guess it won't let her into the dormitory either. So she said she's homeless and she doesn't have anything to eat. But she's going on MSNBC and she makes a crazy allegation. She suggests that they're throwing chemical weapons on her. I mean, wow, right? All right, let's watch Ilhan Omar's daughter with the anchor on MSNBC that just can't get enough of this stuff. And let's see how this misinformation really gets spread.
Do other student groups have this kind of target on their back, or do you feel that you are being targeted because of the fact that it is in solidarity with Palestinians and against what Israel is doing to Palestinians?
Oh, this is 100% targeted. Every single protest that we have, there's a group of counter-protesters that bring all of their items, their flags and things like that, and they're not seen as having unsanctioned protests or really receive the kind of disciplinary warnings that many of our fellow organizers receive just for being seen at these protests. And so there is definitely some hypocrisy here, especially you can kind of see it with the students that were sprayed us with the chemical weapons, and the fact that there's no public information as to what happened to them, but rather the university is actively discussing what is happening to the students here and making it a whole public spectacle, rather than when we haven't done anything to physically harm students, whereas those that sprayed those chemical weapons physically harmed students.
Okay, maybe is she like convoluting something? Is she thinking about how chemical weapons have been used in the Middle East? Because it sounded like she was trying to tell us that she was sprayed with chemical weapons while protesting. And that's pretty crazy. And there was no clarification there from the anchor who seems to be very much on that side of things. Listen, this is getting out of control. It's out of control. They are now in a situation now where students have openly clashed with the police. It has turned violent. You have the one student at Yale University who wound up in the emergency room after having gotten something into her eye. And, you know, another student also complaining about a physical attack there at Yale University. I want you to hear from the mayor of New York City, Eric Adams, who was just out moments ago saying, like, look, this is not something that we can tolerate.
We strongly believe that is the case right now, that there are people who are here, they latch on to any protest. To see our police officers having bottles thrown at them, chairs, people who peacefully protest for an issue, they're not throwing bottles and chairs. And so we know that we have acknowledged and saw across the country, there are people who come, have nothing to do with the issue, and they want to aggravate what I believe is a number of people who are really trying to use this to cause violence in our city. And we're going to seek them out, and we're going to identify them. And I think Commissioner Daughtry made a good point when I saw one of the interviews he did. Why is everybody's tent the same? Was there a fire sale on those tents? There's some organizing going on. You know, there's a well-concerted organizing effort. And what's the goal of that organizing? That's what we need to be asking ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, we got to be asking ourselves. In fact, I'm looking at your chat, and I'm seeing that you guys are saying that. You're saying, like, how is this all sort of happening? Like, who's financing this? And I think that these are important questions to try and understand and ask, because someone is really trying to mess with us. And I have a feeling it's the same people that were behind Black Lives Matter and defund the police and a lot of the movements that were really tearing the country apart. Now, they get a very open audience there, right? All these kids in school that have been told you can silence the other side because, you know, if you don't agree with them, you silence them. And it's okay to use sometimes violent measures. I mean, it's wild. There was a study that came out maybe about 7 months ago that was looking at the views of kids on college campuses. And in some cases, you know, you actually saw so many, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but a lot of them were perfectly fine with using aggression to shut down speech. And so it was sort of looking at how warped things have gotten. And interestingly, these Ivy League schools were the worst, like absolutely positively the worst, because the wokeness virus has infected them in such massive, really significant ways. And I think you're seeing the upshot of that. I mean, administrators are kind of like, well, gosh, you know, this isn't good. I mean, you want to tell me the headline in the Wall Street Journal right now, they're shutting down classes at Columbia University. If you ask me, these protesters are winning when the university cannot actually manage this crisis. When things are that potentially violent, then the protesters are getting exactly what they want. I mean, there's only a few weeks of classes left. And so now you can't go to class on that main quad. I was looking, they're camped out outside the library, and the International Relations Building is right nearby. I mean, this is really, really terrible, terrible stuff. So if you can't actually have your classes now, then you're not managing this appropriately. And the woman who was originally born in Egypt, which, you know, look, it's neither here nor there, but she didn't kind of get how serious this was initially. And so the administrators there have not taken the necessary course of action. Yes, they've come out and slammed the anti-Semitic talk, and they didn't do as bad a job as, say, Claudine Gay at Harvard University. But they're not doing a great job if you got to shut down classes, for goodness sakes. If you've got the need for people to be Zooming in from home because they can't go to class because the protesters have taken over your campus, something's really, really wrong. And the chickens are coming home to roost. They allowed and encouraged this kind of hate. And I mean it, it's hate for the other side. And they encourage them to shut down anyone who didn't agree. That's what wokeism is about. And so now they're like, well, why is this going on? Well, it's going on because you've taken a group of young people and you've corrupted their minds to such a state that now we're looking at you not being able to even hold your classes. How shameful. What do you pay for tuition there? It's like nearly $70,000 a year. I'm sorry. Who wants to go to these schools anymore? They got to get their act together. Maybe this will be a big wake-up call. Robert Kraft, who remembers New England Patriots, he's pulling his money. He's like, I'm out. You know what? I'm an alma mater of this school. I'm not giving a single dime anymore. We're waiting on Leon Cooperman, who's a big hedge fund guy, and Leon's a big deal investor, and he gives a lot of money to the school. And he's said in the past, these kids have S... T for brains. And Leon is right, all right? He hasn't pulled his money yet. He's trying to work with the administration, but he's got a lot of money to pull. And more people are going to say, I don't want to be associated with this. I don't want to hire a kid from one of these places because they're some kind of radical. And so this is becoming seriously a major problem. And these protests are erupting in really, really unhealthy ways. So Donald Trump is absolutely right. Can we play the short clip of him, Drew, that we played at the top of the show, saying that this is just a disgrace, that Biden doesn't know who the heck to back?
What's going on is a disgrace. Now, it's interesting outside. For great Americans, people that want to come down and they want to protest at the court, and they want to protest peacefully, we have more police presence here than anyone's ever seen. For blocks, you can't get near this courthouse. And yet you have nobody up at a college where you have very radical people wanting to rip the colleges down, the universities down. And that's a shame. But it all starts with Joe Biden. The signals he puts out are so bad. And I can tell you, he's no friend of Israel, that's for sure. And he's no...
You know, he's making some really good points. And listen, you have to be strong on these things. It's what the administrators need to do at the schools. And it's what Joe Biden needs to do as president of the United States. Remember, he was strong initially, and then he vacillated because, oh, there's a chorus of people on the extreme left that got really angry about it. And so somehow there's oxygen there. Rashida Tlaib, remember when she got everybody all riled up and they marched to Capitol Hill? Oh, I don't see Rashida Tlaib being tried for interrupting a federal sort of situation. I mean, just like the guy, what's his name? Bowman, who pulled the fire alarm. Justice Neil Gorsuch brought that up the other day when he was like, you know, how do we distinguish here? You know, when you want to talk about somebody interfering with a federal proceeding, I mean, that's happened, right? It's happened. Anyway, they've encouraged this kind of radicalism to the extent now where it's happening all over the country in these schools. And I don't think they're going to be able to deal with it the way they want. There are reasons for it. We can talk about China in a bit. But before we do, I do want to get to David Pecker, the National Enquirer, and all that we have learned about what's going on at the Trump trial today. It's that catch and kill stuff. Before we do, a quick shout out for our friends over at Job Creator Network. You know, as we talk about all this violence that's happening, as we talk about the freedom of speech that apparently we no longer have if you're not on the right side of things, there's a group out there that is committed to making sure that we preserve those rights, including this right, if you would, to prosper. That is so integral to who we are as Americans, the chance to get ahead economically, because we have always historically been a meritocracy. I mean, that's what this country is about. And when you live in an environment where suddenly that meritocracy doesn't matter anymore, where suddenly it's about things that are not at all related to how talented you are, how hardworking you are, what you're willing to do, and it's instead related to a bunch of boxes that you may be able to check off, well, then you got a problem. And it's a problem for business owners. You look at the violence happening at Columbia University, you look at the violence that has happened already across this nation in many great cities. You've got Whole Foods having to pull out of San Francisco, or Walmart pulling out of this place and the other, because they can't guarantee the safety of their workers. They can't guarantee the safety of the environment. At some point, that really hurts. And it hurts small business owners, especially. And Job Creators Network, they know that. They know that, and they're aggressively working at a grassroots level all over the country to make sure that communities are highly aware of the policies that really ultimately will matter. You should try and get involved with this organization. It's kind of like, I describe it as the Chamber of Commerce for people who are a little more conservative. And so check this out. Join JCN. You can join joinjcn.com. That's the handle you need to go to. Alfredo Ortiz runs it. They've got some wonderful, wonderful people there. And look, if you're interested in getting involved, they will do everything to help you do that. And it's no cost to you. They really are looking for people that can help take their message forward. So wonderful organization. All right. Day 5 of the trial. Donald Trump has to sit there while everybody testifies, because those are the rules here. And today was the day when they were talking to David Pecker. He's going to come back later in the week as well. But David Pecker ran a big media company which owned and ran the National Enquirer. Now, the National Enquirer is that paper that you see. It's the supermarket tabloid. It's probably one of the most aggressive of tabloids. And one of the things that you kind of know when you look at it there, or I hope you know, at the supermarket counter is like, maybe it's true, maybe it's not. It's really just kind of entertainment. Entertainment, and you know, a lot of Hollywood celebrities have gone and sued them. And there's been a lot of that. They've actually gotten some stuff right. I mean, remember when they reported on John Edwards? So some stuff they get right, some stuff they really don't. But I think everybody kind of takes it with a grain of salt. Well, apparently, David Pecker, who ran this, and Donald Trump were really good friends, like going all the way back to the 1980s. And then they sort of solidified that friendship during the Apprentice years. And Trump would feed him stories, this, that, and the other. And David Pecker would promote some of those things. Well, when he decided to run for president, David Pecker reportedly continued that friendship. And as a result, was out there looking for negative stories about the people that he was up against. And so let's just say, let me preface this, we'll go through them because Carson was the victim of one of these and so was Ted Cruz. But let me just say, like, politics is one dirty, nasty business. And this is done. And they will print lies about you. And it's just what sort of happens. The difference here is that normally you go to the New York Times, right? The New York Times has sort of the control over all that. I mean, they were talking about Tulsi Gabbard being a Russian spy, for goodness sakes, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so don't pretend this stuff doesn't happen. It's just that nobody used the National Enquirer before to do it, right? Trump didn't have the New York Times on speed dial. He did have his friend who ran the National Enquirer. So according to some of this information that just came out, David Pecker talked about these so-called cash and kill deals that were being done. And in these cash and kill deals, they would pay for, say, a negative story on Trump while having a negative story instead published on somebody else. So let me just share with you, during the testimony, former National Enquirer publisher David Pecker detailed making up the piece that the publication ran about Senator Ted Cruz's father knowing JFK's assassin. He also detailed working with Michael Cohen to target Trump's primary opponents. But then you just have to ask yourself, like, okay, so, I mean, the Ted Cruz story, I always kind of got a kick out of and I thought was pretty wild and I actually never believed it. But I always thought, gosh, you know, Ted is actually really amazing because he's still friends with Trump after Trump was apparently behind the story about his dad and then, you know, commented on his wife's looks. And yet they're still friends because, you know what, that's politics. For better or for worse, that's politics. Well, in this case, we've got Donald Trump apparently doing these catch and kill stories that they're trying to say is illegal. So that was a big part of what was being discussed today. Is it, in fact, illegal to catch and kill a story? And I'm going to just tell you, no. I mean, maybe it's not super lovely ethical, but these things do happen. In the case of the National Enquirer, they would go out and look for a negative story. And then, and this is apparently what happened with Stormy Daniels, aka Stephanie Clifford. Whether or not it's true, we don't even need to debate it. He would say it's not true, but let's just, you know, who cares? Like, somebody's saying something negative and she's about to go and sell her story and make it into a book or this, that, and the other. National Enquirer comes along and is like, oh, you know, we can take your story. And then they never publish it, but they bought the rights to the story, which is why you never sign an NDA, right? That's, I mean, really, because you don't want somebody buying your freedom of speech. And yet, you know, it's perfectly legal. I mean, I don't know where they're going to go in terms of their argument. I'm not an attorney, you know that. So, you know, the economy, we can talk the Fed any day. As far as this stuff goes, I think they're going to have a really hard time trying to convince a judge that you can't do that. Now, was this a political expense? I don't know. I mean, I actually think that that's one where, you know, you might be able to get the jury, if the jury is very, very biased, to side with him on that. But again, is it really a political expense if you just don't want bad information coming out about your personal life? So all of this is indeed going to prove to be very interesting and set some interesting precedents. But I just don't think, knowing what I know about the media, knowing what I know about politics, knowing what I know about journalism, I really don't think that they're going to have much there. Again, remember, the New York Times has done this forever, right? Like, they have their horse and they're backing their horse and they actually print a lot of negative stuff on other people. I mean, maybe some of it's real, maybe some of it's not. Hey, what about the whole Russia collusion thing. That wasn't real, right? So that's just that's kind of stuff that media does, and they're trying to help their so-called horse in the race. And it's bad, but whether or not it's illegal, I just don't think they're going to get there. So that's part of what's being discussed today. Again, David Pecker having spoken. Remember what the New York Times had to say with the allegations about Tulsi Gabbard, and that tells you everything you know about how the media and politicians do, in fact, play hardball. Also relevant right now, and we're waiting on whether or not the judge is going to make any kind of ruling on this. People are like, oh, you know, Donald Trump's going to be in so much trouble because he can't say the things that he's saying, and yet he continues to do so. For example, he's gone after Michael Cohen, his former attorney, who's going to be a witness in the case, after the judge, Judge Mershon, had said, nope, you can't go after witnesses. Okay, you can't go after witnesses, but what about when the witnesses are going after you, like over and over and over again? Like, this is not a normal witness, ladies and gentlemen. Michael Cohen has turned into a political pundit, showing up on MSNBC and CNN every other day, right, to tell you how awful Donald Trump is. I think we have some video of him here on MSNBC saying that, you know, he's just nothing but a big fat liar. I mean, you can't actually respond to that, really? Why does Michael Cohen get protection? Watch.
Yeah, nothing that, you know, that Donald Trump is lying when his lips are moving. He knows that he's probably reaching out to foreign entities or foreign individuals. And so he wants to just make sure that he's, you know, putting this out there in advance of him actually doing it, because that's what he intends to do. He doesn't say things, you know, just haphazardly. There's always a reason behind his insanity. And this is just another one of them. He couldn't get it domestically. And so he'd rather try to reach out to anyone, anyone that will give him the money, as long as he doesn't have to post his own money.
Somehow he's got foreign money, right? Yeah, that's why Letitia James didn't want to accept the bond deal, and then she had to, et cetera, et cetera. So Michael Cohen's out there saying all this stuff. He's over on CNN, too, just spouting off, spouting off, spouting off. Let's take a quick listen, and then we're going to ask the question, why does he get to do this?
Do you know, have any question about whether he'll be convicted?
Oh, I believe, based upon the information that I know and based upon not just the documentary evidence, but the corroborating testimony from so many people, I believe that he will be found guilty on all charges.
Okay. So he's just out there, like all over the airwaves, every single day, multiple times a day, saying things like that. He's going to be found guilty. How is that not polluting the jury pool somehow? So Donald Trump can't go after Michael Cohen for that. And I think that that's kind of a little bit weird. And by the way, so does the Wall Street Journal. Let me share with you. Drew, you don't have this, but I do. I just want to explain to the viewer what the journal is writing in an editorial. They said the same thing, which is that, you know, basically this is an asymmetrical relationship. You know, what's the point of using a judicial gag order to shield the likes, I'm quoting here from the article, of Michael Cohen? Mr. Trump's former fixer is expected to be a key witness in the hush money trial, but lately he's been very busy playing political pundit, saying some of the things, right, that I just showed you right there. So the witness can go on national TV and call the defendant a liar, but the defendant can't reply that the witness is a liar, they ask. The asymmetry, quote, doesn't bolster the trial's integrity or its sense of fairness. Mr. Cohen is a famous figure with cable TV bookers on speed dial. He isn't a random oncology nurse asked to do justice a favor by diving into this vortex. In other words, they're making the point that, you know, you can understand why Donald Trump shouldn't be going after witnesses. But come on, Michael Cohen's fair game, ladies and gentlemen. Fair game. Fair game. And yet you got this gag order that's been issued that prevents Donald Trump from saying anything about Michael Cohen, who yet says all kinds of things about him. So we'll see what happens. I mean, apparently prosecutors had asked him to be fined some $1,000 per violation. There's going to be someone arguing, well, that doesn't mean anything because, you know, $1,000 is irrelevant. Maybe we should go for $500 million, you know? Maybe we get the bond company back trying to do a deal. It's really pretty darn outrageous. Really, really, really outrageous. I want to get to more stuff because we have to talk about maybe there's a role of China in all of this violence that we're seeing there at Columbia and other universities across the country. I mean, I don't think that that should really surprise anyone if it comes out to be the case. It's one of the reasons why people are so worried about TikTok, of course. But ahead of that, a quick shout out for one of our wonderful sponsors on this show. I've told you before, I've been taking Balance of Nature, which I love, and I feel really great. And I take my fruits and veggies every single day. You can too. You can call them at 1-800-246-8751. 1-800-246-8751. You can use discount code Trish, my first name. It's going to get you 35% off, plus another $10 off, plus free shipping. Hey, can't beat it, right? Listen, I've been taking it now for several months. I feel really good, and I think it's probably related. I am not the best about eating enough fruits, so I feel good about taking the fruits and veggies because then I know I'm getting more vitamin D, and I just feel terrific. So I want to encourage you to take a look at this. You go check out their website. You know, I'm not the only one saying this. A lot of people have said this. My kid's music teacher told me this. He's like, I love Balance of Nature. I've been taking it for years, and he looks good. So you know what? I do think that there's something to it. You've got to make sure that you're getting the right vitamins every day. It's a big part of staying healthy. That plus exercise, plus drinking lots of water, which I'm a big fan of. So check them out. Balanceofnature.com. Code word Trish, 35% off. Or give them a ring, 1-800-246. Can we put the number right back up there, Drew? There we go. 8751. 1-800-246-8751. Code word Trish. So one of the questions, and I see in your comments that you guys are asking, is like, who is funding all of these protests? Who's funding these protests? Because it's becoming clearly, increasingly suspicious, right? I mean, you've got to wonder why this is happening at this moment in time. Let's take a quick look, Drew, at those protests going on there. Again, maybe we can just pick up some of the video that came into us from NBC or some of the other ones that have been on social media that we've been watching. As you get to some of the violence and you see there, as you look at this, some of this is New York University. So this is not all from Columbia, but it makes the point, right? What Trump was saying earlier, like, why is this happening? Why are people not really policing this in a better way? You have all of this. That's Columbia right there. That's the library at Columbia University. And I can tell you, normally when you walk across that campus, it's pretty empty. That's also Columbia up on Morningside Drive. It's pretty empty. Like, it's actually sort of like this weird oasis in the middle of New York City. If you haven't been to the campus before, you know, it's just tremendous to see. And I studied there, so I can tell you this. I mean, it's just really like truly an oasis with green grass, and you walk through and it's not crowded. To see like those kind of scenes, it's pretty disturbing. And it tells you that this has just gotten out of control. Now, one of the things that the president of the university, she was born over in the Middle East, I believe in Egypt, and she came to this country when she was five. She was a trained economist. So, you know, you'd think an economist would have a head on their shoulders and be able to manage this a little bit better. She has not been able to. She really has, I think, been such a disaster that you're now looking at something that is just out of control. What, are they going to shut the school down for the rest of the school year? You can't go to your classes. You're paying $70,000 a year and you can't go to class in person. That's what it has come to. That is what it has come to, ladies and gentlemen. And I think it's a huge problem. I do wonder, as we look at the misinformation out there, what role the media has played. I credit NBC with showing those images that you just saw. I credit most of the media with doing the right thing, but not everybody's doing it. We already watched MSNBC talking to Ilhan Omar's daughter and listening to how awful it was for her. And, you know, she's talking about chemical weapons with the National Review shot down right away, called it something else. I mean, there is a definite effort to push a narrative that is so divided from what reality is. NBC is trying, I think, to be better than that. But, you know, just go to MSNBC and you see something else. I want to share with you something that Scott Galloway, who is a good guy. I know him. He actually used to come on my Fox show a lot. He's a professor. He's a brilliant sort of tech entrepreneur. And he's also a professor at NYU. He was on MSNBC. And this is why I say it's good. You know, credit where credit's due. They're still giving some oxygen to the other side. And he points out that the Chinese actually may have a much larger role than you think in all of this, because they want to agitate. And they have TikTok right now, which actually serves as a vehicle for the agitation. And we know that, and it's one of the reasons why TikTok is becoming such a problem. Let's listen to Professor Galloway there.
And I do think there is a double standard. I walked by NYU last night. What I saw was peaceful protests. But I can tell you, if I went into the NYU Square with a white hood on and said, lynch the blacks or burn the gays, my ID would be shut off by that night. And I would never work in academia again. There would be no need for the words context or nuance. I wouldn't be protected by terms like First Amendment or free speech. I would be out of the world of academia. It seems like we have a double standard when it comes to hate speech, as long as it's against Jews.
And we're not just talking about the exercising of free speech and protest, which we agree people have, and there are spaces on campus for that. It's what they're saying. It's the harassment of Jewish students. So what is that? Why is there that double standard? Because, of course, you're right. You don't even have to say it out loud. If these things were being said about black people or gay people or Latinos or Asian or anybody else, forget it. Shut down the school. Everybody's expelled. Why is there still that double standard?
I think it's complicated. I think, one, young people have a healthy gag reflex on what people our age think. And I think that's healthy. Two, I don't think Israel has draped itself in glory over the last 20 or 30 years. They've shifted from being kind of the David to the Goliath. I also think that incorrectly, students on campus conflate the civil rights movement with what is going on in Palestine and have digressed, unfortunately, because of an orthodoxy promoted by me and my colleagues that there are oppressors and oppressed. And the easiest way to identify oppressors is how white and how rich they are, or fairly or unfairly, Israel is seen as ground zero for whiteness and how wealthy they are. And then what might sound paranoid, but doesn't mean I'm wrong. I think we are being manipulated, specifically youth, who their frame for the world is TikTok. And if you look at TikTok, there are 52 videos that are pro-Hamas or pro-Palestinian for every one served on Israel. I think that we are being manipulated. I think Americans are easier to fool than convince they've been fooled. But if I were the CCP, I'd be doing exactly the same thing. I think social.
Okay, you guys heard the dog. You heard the dog. I'm going to play that soundbite again, and then Fluffy's going to make a rare appearance because he just can't. He's been away from me for 5 days or so. I've been in Ireland, and I put him in the other room. He's not having it. He's just not having it. They're doing work in the studio. So let's listen to Scott Galloway again, and Fluffy's going to join the show. Be right back.
And I do think there is a double standard. I walked by NYU last night. What I saw was peaceful protests. But I can tell you, if I went into the NYU Square with a white hood on and said, lynch the blacks or burn the gays, my ID would be shut off by that night. And I would never work in academia again. There would be no need for the words context or nuance. I wouldn't be protected by terms like First Amendment or free speech. I would be out of the world of academia. It seems like we have a double standard when it comes to hate speech, as long as it's against Jews.
And we're not just talking about the exercising of free speech and protest, which we agree people have, and there are spaces on campus for that. It's what they're saying. It's the harassment of Jewish students. So what is that? Why is there that double standard? Because, of course, you're right. You don't even have to say it out loud. If these things were being said about black people or gay people or Latinos or Asian or anybody else, forget it. Shut down the school. Everybody's expelled. Why is there still that double standard?
I think it's complicated. I think, one, young people have a healthy gag reflex on what people our age think. And I think that's healthy. Two, I don't think Israel has draped itself in glory over the last 20 or 30 years. They've shifted from being kind of the David to the Goliath. I also think that incorrectly, students on campus
We've been listening to Scott Galloway talk about sort of the reason for all of this happening right now. Maybe related to China. What do you think about that, buddy? He's so happy to see me. I've been gone for too long. Anyway, China, you know, they're the ones that control TikTok. Let's be very, very clear. And they have a narrative and they have a reason for doing what they're doing, which is to cause us to be so divided internally that it makes it very hard. It makes us weaker as a nation to be able to sort of compete on that international global stage. So don't kid yourself, like trying to think that this is all, I mean, look, The students themselves, they're gullible. The educators, they're part of the woke academia nonsense, which makes these kids more gullible and more sort of susceptible, if you would, to some of the misinformation coming from the likes of TikTok. So I think it's an important thing to consider. You also got to remember, like, even NBC now having to admit what's going on. And this is concerning to me because we don't know who's in this country, right? Let's be very, very clear. We don't know. And when you see these statistics, I'm not even going to say them. I'm going to let NBC say it. This, ladies and gentlemen, should concern everyone. These are just the people we know about. Let's take it away, Drew.
3 years ago, 689 Chinese migrants crossed the southern border. Last year, that number soared to over 37,000, part of an explosion of migrants coming here from all over the globe. Currently, most migrants are released into the U.S. to wait, often years, for asylum hearings. Critics say that encourages migrants to come, and President Biden should change course through executive action.
Did you see those numbers? I mean, that's something, right? We should do like a, can we do a standstill of that graphic, Drew? I mean, those numbers are so
3 years ago
massive when you think about 689, right? Just a few years ago versus 37,439. What is going on? What is going on? And again, these are just the ones that you know about, ladies and gentlemen, because these are the ones that they have intercepted. I mean, a lot of things could be at play. The normal stuff, which is that, you know, Biden held up a giant welcome sign, and that may be part of it. But I also think that you have to worry that as many people that may be coming here for the right reasons, et cetera, 37,000, I mean, is this some kind of invasion? Is this China, which, by the way, is a known foe of the United States, trying to have some influence here? I think you got to examine these questions, and I don't think you should be naive about this. I mean, 689 to nearly 40,000, those are some staggering numbers. And you need to understand it. You need to know who's here and why they're coming here. And if you don't, then you leave us vulnerable on the national security level. But hey, we're not worried about that, right? We're not worried about it because we're worried about things like Ukraine. I want to play a soundbite for you. This is from Representative Donnelly out of Virginia, a Democrat, who said, we have to care about Ukraine. It is really, really, really important. Wait till you hear why.
Some say, well, we have to deal with our border first. The Ukrainian-Russian border is our border. It's the border between depraved autocracy and freedom-loving people seeking our democratic way of life.
It's our border. You get it? It's our border. That's why we have to worry about it. It's our border, ladies and gentlemen. You know, there's a lot wrong with that statement. I can understand, okay, maybe you want to have some say in that part of the world. Maybe you're using it as a proxy war to tie up Putin, to actually keep him really, really busy so that he doesn't join forces with China, et cetera. Or maybe you're just actually really not good at your job and you've made a whole bunch of blunders that have gotten us into the situation we're in. I mean, that's my argument, that this is just diplomacy gone wrong. And it's partly because we get Tony Blinken, who doesn't really know what he's doing there, running the show along with Joe Biden. It's, you know, something to think about considering how everything has escalated, you know, whether we were trying to get out of Afghanistan, which I don't think anybody would really disagree with. Nobody wants to be over there, but it's how you do it, right? And who you leave behind and whether you leave anybody behind. And one of the concerns is we got out and we got out too fast and we left a bunch of weaponry that could then get into the hands of the bad guys behind. So that was one mistake. And then, you know, this Ukraine-Russia situation, if you understand it from the other side, you really should understand that it's got to be a balancing act from a diplomacy standpoint. We allegedly have had operations. I don't have to reportedly look. It was in the New York Times. Not that you can believe everything there, but they reported like some 23 pages in a PDF doc on how we've been there with our CIA op going on since 2014, since the Maidan Revolution. Well, if that's the case, and we've been there for so long, then Trump knew about it. And this somehow was contained. So why did it bubble up now? Apparently part of the drill was that the CIA was told never allow this to escalate. Well, somebody allowed it to escalate. So you got to ask yourself about that. And now we're in a situation where we're going to pay all this money out. And the American people, they don't really want it. It gets back to, I keep asking, why don't we use our financial power? We have a lot of financial power. And like, for whatever reason, we don't use it. we prefer to actually, I mean, it's kind of unthinkable, and it's really horrific to think that you're going to sacrifice lives before you would sacrifice dollars. But that's indeed what goes on. And so instead of being smart and thinking about how we sanction appropriately Russia or anyone who's doing business with them, thank you very much, we do other things. Well, it turns out today, finally, the administration admitted that it's drafting financial sanctions against Russian banks that are aiding Russia in this effort in Ukraine. I'm just looking at this going, why the heck didn't we do this earlier? I mean, why do we have to wait till now? This kind of seems like an obvious step, right? If there are banks in China that are helping to bankroll the Russians so that they can buy weaponry and fight in Ukraine, like, why didn't you guys do this ages ago? I mean, this is the obvious low-hanging fruit stuff. This is what somebody who's been in business, someone who understands finance, someone who understands the economy, someone who understands how to use the power that they have would have done. And yet people are, oh my gosh, he throws around, I'm talking about Donald Trump, the use of sanctions all the time. How could he do that? Why does he do that? Why? Because that's actually a really good weapon, ladies and gentlemen, and it doesn't require people dying in the process. So my view on this, and you've heard this many times before, and it's one of the reasons I liked Trump's foreign policy, was that you use everything in your economic power before you result in or get to the point where you're seeing the results being fights on the ground. We need to be smarter about this. We need to use sanctioning to the best of our ability to actually throw our weight around. Instead of just saying this, that, or the other and being kind of half-assed about it all, we need to actually say what we mean and put our money quite literally where our mouth is. So now finally, Blinken's going to go over there next week and he's going to wave around his draft of his possible financial sanctions against these banks, and maybe China will get the message, although I doubt it. And they're going to continue to tinker with us and push us to be more divided by encouraging, however they can, what you're seeing on college campuses all across the country. So remember that. Remember just who's behind it. I mean, granted, as I said, you got a gullible group there. You've got academia, which has been infiltrated, frankly, by this globalist wokeism that, in my view, it originates out of places that have an ulterior motive. I mean, just look at where the money is that's coming in to fund the Middle Eastern studies professors, the Chinese professors, etc. And that tells you a lot, right? Just follow the money and you're going to learn a lot, a whole lot. Speaking of following the money, I want to take a look at the yield on the 10-year bond. You know, if you haven't signed up for my financial newsletter, you really need to. You need to, because it's all about planning for your future. It's all about understanding what companies, what stocks specifically are going to be beneficial for you in the long run, so that one day, you know, hopefully you're not working forever, you can live off of some of that retirement income coming to you from a really strong, good, solid portfolio of good companies with, depending on what you are looking for, because we have different model portfolios at 76research.com, but different portfolios there. Drew, maybe you can put that graphic up, unless I have it. I can actually type it in here. Okay, so 76research.com. Go there and check it out. You can look at the model portfolios. And there's a lot of information about how to invest. I created this with my friend Rob Horton, who has worked for decades on Wall Street and managed so much money, like that, you know, billions of dollars. And he has really always believed, I mean, so many of these companies, I think he has them all himself as well, because these are companies that really are just stalwarts in the industry. And so there's some things you should read there. There's model portfolios, one for growth. It's the American Resilience portfolio, one for dividend, and one for generating income. And so I encourage you to go there. You can sign up for free for the news. Well, for some of the stuff, there's a lesser price newsletter as well as the model portfolios, which, you know, will not break the bank. Typically this kind of research cost thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. And I just felt strongly that we had an opportunity to reach a larger market and really be able to help people in this investing process. So go check it out. 76research.com. That is right, right? Remember? 76research.com. It's my new company that I started with Rob Horton, and it's just us. So we don't have any of the we don't have any of the biases or the conflicts that you would see on Wall Street and elsewhere. And so that's, again, I think very unique and one of the reasons why you might want to take a look. But this is wild. We look here at the 10-year, and the 10-year has been climbing pretty steadily. Gold has been doing pretty well. Gold's down a touch today, but still at an enormous valuation at $23.35. Rob has some very specific views. We love gold. I mean, I've been a big believer in it for so long. But again, another reason to sign up for 76 Report, because you can get all of that valuable information on gold. I'm looking at the yield on the 10-year, 4.6% right now. I think when we were looking at it earlier, Drew, what was it, 4.59? Okay, so now it just tipped over into 4.6, down a teeny tiny touch today. But when you look at that graph and you see over the last month how much it has climbed, one of the reasons for that, I think, is just the concern that America doesn't have an easy way out of the inflation that we're now in. I mean, you look at the price of eggs, for example, over the last 3 years, you look at the price of gas, you look at the increase in the housing costs for both rents and mortgages, and they are massive, they are significant, and wages are not keeping up enough with that. So Joe Biden has failed us from an economic standpoint, but it's not just Biden, right? Like, there's blame to go around, because Chuck Schumer was there spending like a drunken sailor, so much money that we just didn't have. And they were using March 2020 as their excuse to just print and print and print and print. And the printing got ratcheted up when Biden came into office. You had Jerome Powell running the Federal Reserve, and he still doesn't quite get it that he has created a massive inflation problem. This whole transitory stuff, totally nonsense. And so if you're another country elsewhere, you're looking at this and saying, well, I don't really want to be indebted to the United States anyway, right? They're worried that the U.S. can throw its weight around from a military perspective and from a financial perspective, right? That's about what we're going to do with China because of the sanctions. And so they're trying to find some other solution. Now, I really wouldn't want to be invested anywhere else, but it's perhaps one of the reasons why you see gold moving higher at that level, 2335, just having touched 2400, above 2400 just the other day. And so this is really unprecedented. We've never seen these kind of gold prices before, but they may be understandable when you think about the obstacles that the U.S. faces in the future. And so you have central banks all over the world saying, okay, well, I better buy gold because like that's the one thing I can really count on. And you've been able to count on it for thousands and thousands of years. Again, we get into this at 76. Go check out 76research.com. Sign up there. I encourage you to do this because there's a lot of information that you can get. A lot of it's free that will help explain some of these phenomenons that are happening. But like if the U.S. is stuck having to pay for all these wars all over the world that we're engaging in and really spreading our resources pretty thin and then continuing to print, then your dollar is going to continue to lose value. And that's where we are right now. And so I'd like to see somebody in charge that understands this. Politicians typically only care about getting elected, right? So they don't actually look out for the policies that are going to make a difference in your life, in my life. They are out to only get themselves elected. So they will choose the path of least resistance. They will always choose to spend, print and spend. That's what they do. And they're going to keep doing it until somebody says, all right, enough. And you would think that the Federal Reserve would have enough intelligence to do the right thing, that they'd have enough backbone. And yet they never do. They never do. And I think there's some political bias there. I'm going to be totally frank. I don't think Jerome Powell, even though he was appointed by Donald Trump, I don't think that he liked Trump very much, and he's more embedded with his old boss, Janet Yellen, who is now the Treasury Secretary of the United States. And somehow she sees this as, it'll get under control. I don't know how it's going to get under control at this point. I really don't. It's actually quite unnerving. So a bigger reason for you to really think hard about how you're investing for the future, go to 76 Research, check that out. Sign up for the model portfolios because that will be sort of a really good guidepost for you. I want to say I'm really happy to be back. I'm going to be posting some pictures on Instagram. Yes, on Instagram. I'll try and put some up here too on the YouTube chat. But of Ireland, I had an amazing, 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 amazing time. It was such a quick trip. But like I said, this little guy missed me and I missed him. We are doing some work on my studio. So I can't wait to unveil that and show it to you. But that means I've gotten relegated to downstairs with this guy, which is, you know, there's worse things that could happen, right? I'm just looking out at some of your comments. Yes, you did hear the dog. I know you heard the dog. Thank you for telling me. It can get kind of much. Don Baca talking about Alan Dershowitz saying that no crime, no First Amendment, no Trump. You know, look, I agree with you. Don, look, this is an environment, and Alan knows a lot more about the law, obviously, than I do. But he, just sort of my instinct here is that you don't have something you can prosecute. I mean, it may be unseemly. And look, the National Enquirer, you know, publishing stories that were pro-Trump, anti-competitors. I mean, it happens, right? Like, it happens. And I don't understand how you would insist that that is an actual crime. So, David, I'm glad to be back as well. You know, I see some of you are not fond of sending all this money to Ukraine. I would just say, like, what are we going to do? Like, you just print more money so that you can send over there to Ukraine? You have all of these congressional representatives that are somehow very deeply embedded in this. And I think that you're going to have to do a lot to justify it to the American people. This is where leadership comes in. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is where leadership matters. And so you need someone in the Oval Office that can actually explain this. If we're going to be in something, like, explain it to the American people. They're not dumb. Well, these people, they think you're dumb. They really do. They think you're totally dumb. And because you're so dumb, they want to control the narrative. They want to control all the information. And they do. And then when it comes back to bite them, like, you know, the Columbia University head, she may be done. I mean, I really don't see how she can continue at Columbia. I think that she will have to resign. Even the White House is trying to come out and say some things against her. And just, you know, Columbia, this is terrible. This is absolutely terrible. Joe Biden, you know, he doesn't know what to do on any of this, but at least he's admitting that. And I think that you're going to have to really start to see a real leader. And if we don't have that, then I guess I'm buying more gold. I don't know. Right, buddy? Anyway, it's good to see you all. I'm really glad to be back. You know, I'm here every day and we always check in around this time. Make sure that you hit the bell and the subscribe so that you can always connect directly with me. We're going to be covering this trial every single day. I really think there's nothing here. There's nothing here. And it's going to be another example of falling flat on the face. Now, that's not to say a jury's not going to find something, right? We don't know how biased the jury is. You're in New York City. Like, no one voted for Trump in New York City. No one. They hate him in New York City. And so it's going to be perhaps challenging to get a fair trial there. And then you risk this judge being, you know, as crazy as the last one. And Alvin Bragg being who he is. And so I just think it's going to be a real mess. But I'm here. I'm committed. I know you are, because so much is at stake at this moment in time. Thanks so much for joining. Eric, good to see you. Thumbs up to you as well. And I love the American flag and the happy faces. Joe, thank you for that. I'm very, very glad to be back. I will see you guys tomorrow, probably still from here, but maybe I'll keep Fluffy with me. See you then.